Bless you, whoever did it.
Yeah, it's Principal Owen.
I'm going to call this meeting of the House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness to order for Thursday, February 11th, 2016. And we're going to start by opening a public hearing on House Bill 4097.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4097, we heard on Tuesday in the form of an informational meeting. This is the one where the Dash 1 amendment is replacing the placeholder content of the bill. It's the 911 operations bill for the Warm Springs. It's just close.
Okay. So we have two people have signed up to speak, Mr. Michael Mason and Dave Stuckey. You both want to come forward? So did we talk about the amendment?
I did, sir.
Oh, okay. Please introduce yourself for the record. Okay. Welcome again.
Thank you, Chair Lockley, and members of the Veterans and Emergency Preparedness Committee. My name is Michael Mason. I represent the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs Reservation of Oregon, and very glad to be here today, and thank you again for so quickly considering an amendment to House Bill 4097 to save the Warm Springs 911 communications point, though, excuse me, I'm not familiar with the lingo exactly on this. This being a new issue for me, along with some other new issues this session. You know, as we discussed the other day, they've had this going for 17 years. It's been hugely helpful to the not only the members of the tribe, but other people living on around the reservation. And as I said, 2,100 calls a year into that 911 number. And the folks, you know, the importance of this for it being at Warm Springs is, of course, that, you know, half the staff are Warm Springs members. They know the reservation intimately. They know where the dead zones are. They know where Gladys lives, or whoever calls, whatever elder calls and identifies herself by or himself by first name, they know where they are and know how to get there. So it's you know, it really is important and important to keep that and not have it kind of by default move up to the Dalles or Condon. And it's a very cooperative relationship with emergency management, with the military department. They worked very well together with the tribes on this. And I think it's one of those examples that we see so much in Oregon and is envied by most of the tribes around the country, is the relationship that gets built between tribes and folks on the ground, state agencies especially. It's a level of cooperation that's lacking in a lot of states, and they're really proud of that, proud of the cooperation and kind of government-to-government relationship that's been built up. So thank you for considering this amendment to 4097. Hope that can pass today. I did ask the committee administrator if we could have a probable work session on there instead of just possible, because, you know, anything's possible. It's America.
No, good for you. Know.
but I guess that you have to change the rules to
That's
do
right.
that, so we won't go into that short session. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I do have a question. So from that center, so who is dispatched? So I assume they take the calls, but then they also dispatch police, fire. I mean, who's dispatched from that center?
Yeah, so Warm Springs has a fire department.
Okay.
And they have, of course, Warm Springs Tribal Police Department.
Yep.
That doesn't mean that they're the ones who can get to someplace first. So they're tied in very closely with the Jefferson County Sheriff. And on the north end, not so much on the north end, the reservation is Wasco County, and that's farther away with the Jefferson County. But it would normally be a Warm Springs emergency, you know, first responders.
Sure.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Mr. Stuckey?
Chair Lively, members of the committee, I'm Dave Stuckey, Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department, representing OEM and the 911 functions this morning, or this afternoon. Heard my testimony on Tuesday, and in short, OMD supports this, and we're asking for your support also. I'd like to echo Michael's comments here that we want to thank you for the timeliness and being able to respond to this. This provides an opportunity to rectify an issue that came to light here in the last couple of months. We've had a history with Warm Springs PSAP since 1999, 17 years. As you well know, not only do we have tribal members, but we also have a great deal of visitors that go through that boundary as well as into it. And so this just helps rectify that, clarify it, and allow us to make certain that we can enter into an agreement, a proper agreement, that we can help maintain to ensure that the telcos are providing the backbone that they need, that are the statutory responsibility of OEM, as well as making certain that the tribe does what they have been doing and intend to do in the future. And so with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Stuckey? Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This, to me, is a tool, because normally I'd say, well, you know, we can have, like the state police has two PSAPs in the whole state, and they can locate you wherever you're at. But do we have the ability, because I'm thinking about the Cascadia effect. We're going to need those PSAPs online, and they will be online. Do they have the ability to switch over and do a statewide interface?
Chair Lively, Representative Escobar, to create a 911 jurisdiction, they all have to have a backup plan, a redundancy plan. As far as being able to, could a PSAP in Eastern Oregon dispatch to the coast unless they're currently designed? No. We do have a PSAP right now in this town, Salem, that has a large portion of its dispatch component, or correction, its responsibilities, that reaches all the way to the coast. And so from a technology standpoint, it's possible. At some point in time, we're going to move there. I certainly don't want to talk about a new technology program today.
today.
Why not?
If you want to go there, sir,
not the same
talk
people
that
did cover Oregon.
Sir, I would like to... Ultimately, I'd like to say that this just helps clarify the current practice that we have had. And the Warm Springs PSAP has been one of those 43 PSAPs that we've counted over the last 17 years, and we certainly would like it to continue in the future.
Follow-up.
Certainly.
Yes, because I know that you can purchase overlays within your computerization system where you can, I mean, in Medford, they can do water, they can do electrical, they can do street. You know, the sewage system, the water lines, everything, and just by pressing a button, because it overlays. And it also gives them complete addresses on everything there. But I was wondering if we had something like that available in the state.
Yeah. Chair Lively, Vice Chair Escobar, there is a GIS, a geospatial component to all these, and there are standards that must be met for all the PSAPs. And there's a component in terms of center street addressing, et cetera, that there are certain layers that are required, so we know, so there is compatibility. Because ultimately, we want to make certain that the boundary of PSAP A and the boundary of PSAP B is actually accurate. I mean, that on paper,
right,
in reality, is all the same. And so,
I'd hate to be in the middle with no one to claim.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And and quite frankly, the PSAP community does a great deal of ensuring that coverage is proper, as well as there's a funding mechanism and a policy mechanism at OEM to help solidify that.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative
Boone? Not really a question, just a comment, I guess. And I think the PSAPs have been depleted by about half or so from what we used to have, but it is important for those who dispatch in an area to know that area. And I know in my little corner of the world that when there's a new dispatcher who comes online, they take him or her out for a ride along and show them where the boundaries of the districts are. Excuse me. And so they know that I'm gonna have to quit now.
Sorry. Go ahead, take a drink. That's okay.
Very important.
But I just wanted to double up on that and say it's what you said about knowing your area is very important. We had a case a couple years ago where there were two sets of addresses, different parts of my county, that actually were the same address, different places, so you have to know where you are. Okay, I'm done.
I have a greater appreciation for the call centers, as my youngest daughter has worked in the one in Lane County for 5 years now, and I've done several ride-alongs, and they dispatch police and fire and multiple things throughout the county. There's also others that dispatch their own, but all the calls come into the 911 center, so I have both an appreciation of the people that work there and the job it is to know all of that stuff in order to make sure the dispatch is correct.
I sucked it in.
Thank you again for being here. Anybody else who wishes to offer testimony? House Bill 4097?
Good bill should pass.
How important is that emergency?
Does that count for testimony?
Good bill should pass. Oh, that's right. Sorry. I appreciate that. Oh, you should. Thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4097. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 4097. Vice Chair Boone.
Chair Lively, I move to adopt the -1 amendment dated February 8, 2016.
Vice Chair Boone moves to adopt the -1 amendments dated February 8, 2016 to House Bill 4097. Is there any discussion? Any objection to adopting the amendment? Okay. Amendment is adopted.
Chair Lively, I move House Bill 4097 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you.
Take
Vice Chair.
I'm trying to probes today. Sorry.
Move it's our, right, we're almost done. So. Vice Chair Boone moves that House Bill 4097 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative Huffman?
Yes.
Representative Parrish?
Excused.
Representative Peluso?
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Escobar?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. Motion passes, and I assume Representative Huffman.
No, is this his bill?
Mm-hmm.
Well, would we assign it to somebody else?
Well, we could. Would you?
Should we? Mr. Chair, I would be honored to carry the bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Huffman, carry the bill. So I'm going to close the work session on 4097.
Good bill should pass.
That's right.
Good thing you two boys are separated here.
No just kidding.
Come on.
Okay.
We've been around.
So I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4096. And so, members, just to remind you, this is we're not planning to take action this session, but this is a continuing discussion that we started in the last session about amendments or changes to the veterans' preference. And this particular bill was the vehicle, well, is what we introduced this time as kind of the status of where the work had progressed to between Representative Huffman and Representative Evans and others. And so people can testify whatever they want to testify, but my intent in opening this is just simply to identify the key areas that we're still in disagreement. If we're going to solve this problem, then I want to make sure we have on the record what those one, two, or three areas are. As many people know, there's those in our state that believe the law is fine the way it is. And so I'm not trying to review all that territory. I'm only trying to make sure we come out of this today with wherever, what those key areas are, so that if we do something between now and 2017, that's what we address and not start over. Does that work for people? Representative Evans.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I really do appreciate this opportunity for people to have input. I just want to clarify that the bill that we have right now actually wasn't exactly what Representative Huffman and I had tried to get through the Legislative Council. So it's
all we have.
You're right. It's what we have, right?
Oh, okay. There's thank you. Thanks for clarifying
that. Mr. Chair, if I could kind of start off.
Yeah, that would be great.
I did get an email from a gentleman, and maybe most of us did. I'm sure Rep. Evans did too, having a problem with the 10-year part that we had in there. If your military training experience was beyond the 10 years since you had it, then it wouldn't count for the preference. And so he wanted to get on the record, Mr. Getty, saying that he disagreed with that and thought it should be a lifetime situation. So I said I would pass that along.
We'll put that on the list, absolutely. Anything, you want to add anything, Paul, at this point?
No, sir.
Okay. So let's see. We have several people signed up to speak, so let's have Andy Smith from AOC. Whoever wants to, is there others want to come with you and testify? Okay, come ahead.
That makes sense.
Yeah, Scott. Yeah. Okay. Welcome, gentlemen. Please state your name for the record.
Andy Smith from the Association of Oregon Counties.
Scott Winkles representing the League of Oregon Cities.
Very good, and thank you for taking the time.
Chair Lively, members of the committee, Scott Winkles representing the League of Oregon Cities. We are an association of all 242 incorporated cities in the state of Oregon, and it's my privilege to represent them on all things human resources. We authored a letter on this when it was LC 50, Legislative Concept 57, and there were some things in the concept that we liked and endorsed, and there were some concerns and some things that we felt were left undone. I'll start with the issues that the League has some support for, could support, and one is the definition. One of the things in the LC was that it changed the definition of a higher average salary, and so why that's important is that we have a scenario where a police officer, this usually manifests in police positions, where there might be an assignment that involves on-call pay or an incentive pay or something along those lines, where an officer is required to be on call and they receive a little bit of extra compensation that way. Those assignments are usually done under a collective bargaining agreement. And so the position we have is if any position that involves a higher average salary is viewed as a promotion, that could be viewed as a promotion, but then we also have this CBA issue, and so the employer was looking at, and this came to the surface in Beaverton's police department, where they were either looking at an ERB, Employment Relations Board issue, or a bully issue, and I don't think the statute was ever intended to put an employer in that position of picking who they were going to get raked over the coals by, and so I think we did have some changes to that in the language that was very helpful. On the 10-year piece, I guess I was the proponent of that originally, and the reason we supported that piece is the direction from the committee, and what we kept hearing was that it was designed for the veterans who were having an unemployment crisis. So we really got down into the data with the Department of Labor, and we looked at where that unemployment crisis existed. And so what we found was consistently if you were a Gulf War I veteran, defined as the previous engagement with Iraq after their Kuwait incursion, later, that the unemployment numbers were significantly lower than the general population. And so but if you were a Gulf War II veteran, defined as anything post September 11th, those unemployment numbers were through the roof, higher than the general population. Those numbers were so high that it actually drove the entire veterans population numbers below the labor force average. And so the issue, and why the 10-year issue is there, is that we have scenarios where a veteran who has just separated from the service could apply for a position. That person is clear in that population where there is a very clear, definite, well-defined unemployment crisis, competing with a person who has been in the workforce for a number of years, and they both receive the same preference. And so the point, if I understand it correctly, was that the committee wanted to find a way to address the unemployment crisis, and this is sort of where we came up with. I don't know that we did it perfectly, but that was the mission, and that was what we were attempting to do there. I understand why there may be some concerns with that provision. Additionally, whether we're going to call preference or special consideration, whatever we're going to call it, we need to have a better definition of this term. We don't believe it's reasonable for bully or the employer to have to interpret a statute that has an undefined term as important as preference. If you're going to tell us a preference or you're going to tell us to provide a special consideration, that has to be a clearly defined term. Absence a clear definition, then an employer is locked into a point system, which isn't necessarily appropriate for all positions that the city might be hiring, particularly, you know, if you're looking at a management position, say, I know that there was a larger employer that was hiring a division head, and part of that process was that they would do a meet and greets with various stakeholders, members of the bargaining unit, public, other managers. How do you apply consideration to that? And that sort of gets into the next point, and that was the timing of the preference. Is it when do we apply it? Or the special consideration? And so making sure that that was done. And then again, the issue for some employers is it was important that if the number of employers that does that mean?
Everybody's checking, me. I know.
I don't think I had that tone, but I wanted to say the number of veterans to be hired. So for a public works, I think they have a better term for it, but shovel operator one. The requirements are essentially to be free of serious criminal convictions, be able to lift repeatedly 50 pounds. Those are the requirements, and so putting a cap on the actual number, because you may have a large number of people applying, and the issue is you might have a person who's traveling a long distance for a position that they may not be competitive for, and I don't think that's what we intended. I don't think that's what was being served. But getting back to the bill is at hand, I think the league felt that we were very close with, I think we were up to the sevens or eights amendments to the Senate Bill 87 during the long session. I think those would make reasonable starting points for continued conversations on moving this forward. And with that, I will turn it over to my colleague.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
Just clarification on the unfortunate thing going into this session was that those points that you made and points that people had made all through the legislative session that were valid and meaningful, the need for a definition, the delivery of the preference at key specific points that were clear, undeniable, was actually part of the thing that didn't get written in time. And I'm hoping that during the interim now we can perhaps throw that out there, because I think we may even be closer than the dash sevens if we can get that out in front of people.
Can we hold you to that?
No, sir.
Mr. Chair.
Person Huffman, please.
You know, along the lines, too, as Scott was talking, I was reminded of some of the feedback that we got, too, is that whatever term we come up with, the point is not to position veterans as a special needy welfare population. That's not the point. Mm-hmm. And so whatever we come up with, I want to make sure that it's something that veterans can be proud of and support. It's to enable them, hopefully, to be able to reasonably get a chance at a job. You know, that we were witnessing way too many times they couldn't even get an interview. It's not welfare. And so whatever we come up with, I just want to make sure that people understand that that's the point.
The DAS language was kind of what we had decided to go with. And the reason for the 10 was we understood the numbers of people were a concern. The other part about the 10 years is that would, instead of having an arbitrary cap, the 10-year would be another way of limiting the number of people that are actually applying, but emphasizing recently.
Go ahead.
Chair Lively, Representative Huffman, I'm mortified if that's the impression that I left you with language.
No.
Okay.
No, Mr. Chair. No, Scott, you didn't. When you said that, it reminded me that there was some pushback from folks. No, not you. I just thank you for clarifying that on the record. No, it wasn't. Your position. It was just I was reminded that term, I think, maybe does bring in a connotation from some folks, and I just wanted to clarify that we never had the intent of it being a welfare bill.
Okay.
Thank you.
My twin brother is currently not on this continent in service of his country, so I'm sensitive.
Yeah.
Right.
Understood. Thank you. Andy.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively, Vice Chair Boone, Vice Chair Esquivel, and members of the committee. Again, my name is Andy Smith from the Association of Oregon Counties. And first, I want to thank you, Chair Lively, Representative Evans, and Representative Huffman, for keeping this issue on the front burner. It has a long history, and it's a significant need for our state. So I'm going to step back a little bit from Scott and just the kind of the big picture thinking from our county commissioners on this issue, the veterans preference issue. We think that this is an issue that needs work. We can do better on this issue. As counties, we can do better. As cities, as the state, as a public employer, we can do better. And our veterans certainly deserve better. And I think the goal from today is that the finish line is not that far off. 2017 is not really that far off. It's a little bit off. But when we get there, I think this is the kind of bill that, you know, maybe the first part of the session is a bill that we could get to a finish line. So consistent with that, AOC believes that Senate Bill 87 was a great piece of work in terms of how far it got. That doesn't necessarily mean that it got to 100% of a bill that you want to feel that you could all be proud of, but maybe we were at 85%, something like that. So there's some work to be done. You know, in particular, the areas that we think, you know, keeping the goals in mind, what we want to do here, what our commissioners want to do, this should be from the veterans' perspective, from the veterans' lens. We want to make the statutes more clear. We want to make them much simpler. We want to make them understandable. We want to make them consistent for veterans that would come into a public employer setting and be able to understand, what does this preference mean to me? And am I being treated, I think, consistent with Representative Huffman said, the position is that veterans can compete. They're exceptionally qualified. But what they can't do sometimes is make that translation. They can't provide a clear translation of their experience and skills in the military, what they could bring to that employer, and kind of get into the process and get in front of the hiring panel and make that case for their employment. So we need to do things differently than we're doing under the current statute.
Well put.
And I think the current statute, a couple words to describe it, it's not coherent, it's incoherent, and it's not effective. In terms of, you know, does a vet come out of there thinking I got a fair shake? They probably say, I don't know what happened. I'm not sure what if I got a preference, didn't get a preference. So, again, we do think that Senate Bill 87 would be the place to start from, and our commissioners would be delighted to continue that conversation and would be open to make it better from where we start. But what I think we wouldn't want to do is really start over, because I think that the degree, the substantive work of that bill, if you look at how many pages long that it is, it does lay out a new roadmap that I think, and it's not necessarily, I don't know if easy is the right word, but it's much easier than what it was to understand how does a veteran enter the or compete in the public sector for a position. And we think that that's what veterans deserve and expect. So without going too much further, just to leave it open for questions, again, I don't think we want to forget the history in terms of the work that went into this bill. The work group started in April of 2014. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes, as you know, the bills it takes a while sometimes. And I think this bill, we were very close at the end of the 15th session. I think the dash sevens or wherever we were, dash sixes, dash sevens, those were kind of last little pieces that would have taken this bill across the finish line. So we think to remember that history is where you should be. And you know, honor that work, not necessarily be stuck with that work, but honor that work and do a little more work, and we think early in this 2017 you could have a bill and we could help you move it.
Thank
you.
Thanks, Andy. Questions? Okay, questions for Andy? So we share your goal. I mean, the goal from my standpoint is when 2017 is gaveled in, that we're ready to go and put this one to bed. So that would be our goal, too. We should have time between now and then. I think, again, as you said, we're close, so we ought to be able to figure that out. Anything further?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sure.
Thanks a lot. So next I will call up Paloma Sparks and Michael Salvaggio. I know that. Welcome. Whoever wants to.
I can go. So, Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Michael Salvaggio. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Coalition of Police and Sheriffs. We represent line officers and sheriff's deputies around the state. Last session, we expressed deep concern with Senate Bill 87, both in person and in writing, and we saw that as a drastic rollback to the hiring and promotion preferences afforded to veterans for their relevant skill sets. It's obvious that a lot of work has been done. It's obvious that a lot of effort and good intentions have gone into this, and there are things in House Bill 4096 that we like and things that we don't like. So I want to applaud those efforts so far, but I must report at this time that the Coalition of Police and Sheriffs opposes the concept as currently drafted. Our opposition last year was centered around what we saw as a trend to morph an objective standard into a more subjective process and allowing the employer wide discretion in choosing when and how to implement standards. We still see a high degree of ambiguity and discretion in the implementation of what's called requested skills in Section 1. In Section 2, that references the 10-year time limit. We weren't very understanding of why that was in there. I think that the testimony today kind of helped fill us in. But from our perspective, the point of what we see is the point of the veterans preference process is to.
I could explain the 10-year thing if that'd be helpful.
Let me finish. Go ahead. Thank you.
Is to allow candidates for a promotion or hiring to gain credit for the relevant experience. We don't see that experience falling off after 10 years. In Section 3, the phrase, as determined by the public employer, again, affords an extraordinary degree of discretion to the employer, especially with regards to determining the applicability of skills in question, or to the position in question. In our mind, this cuts very, very close to the principle behind the current statutes. But we do very much appreciate and applaud the portion of Section 3 dealing with the explanation statement to applicants who were not interviewed. It's clear, it's unambiguous, and it's a very helpful addition to job and promotion applicants. We do hope that we are able to participate as this discussion progresses, and I want to thank the stakeholders who have contributed their time and effort. But again, for the record, the bill is currently drafted. We're not able to get into a supportive position.
Thank you very much. Representative Evans, did you have a...
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chair Lively. The original intent of the bill when it was put into effect the first time was exactly that, to help folks that were recently returned getting an opportunity to get hired, because it was very difficult to explain how an enlisted performance report translated into a resume. And the idea was that we were confronted with in the session was that there was a desire to cap or limit the total number of veterans involved in any type of situation. And it was brought into the discussion from Representative Huffman that, and I agreed, that what you did 30 years ago is important and noble, but the real problem is for the folks coming back translating that recent experience into things that are marketable for today. And the 10-year standard was picked because the GI Bill has a 10-year life as well. And again, GI Bill is a federal program that most vets understand. They know when the clock starts, they know when it stops. And the 10-year was, again, an attempt to, A, emphasize the folks coming back or recently back, and B, the idea would be that if a veteran's been back for 10 years, they should have a resume. They should be able to explain what they've been doing for 10 years, give or take, whereas the folks getting back right now need the most help. So that was, a starting point for conversation. I'll shut up now.
Sure.
Mike, members of the committee, I had a question also. In terms of employer discretion being a matter of subjectivity, we've heard from LFC, AOC, both talking about terms that they would like to have defined. If tightening up on term definitions, would that, in terms of reducing subjectivity, if they had, would that be more definite, be clear, or would that be something they'd agree to? Generally speaking,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's correct. Generally speaking, we like to see less ambiguity around these statutes. It was unclear to us exactly how the concept of requested skills was meant to objectively apply, or whether that was meant to subjectively apply, for example. So,
thank you.
So, yes.
Sure. Okay, Paloma, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively, members of the committee. For the record, Paloma Sparks with the Bureau of Labor and Industries. As you know, the Bureau enforces the current veterans preference law. Under our civil rights law, our approach to veterans hiring ensures that veterans have a fair and meaningful shot at a job while providing clarity to employers who seek to navigate Oregon's law. In 2014, this committee directed Boley to lead a work group to review veterans' preference. The correspondence from the committee stated that it was the legislature's intent that qualified veterans should be interviewed. We agree. Early on, the work group made progress in terms of looking at definitions, and I think that continues to be a goal that we can all agree on. There were some more drastic suggested changes that were proposed in Senate Bill 87. The Bureau opposed those then and continues to oppose them. House Bill 4096 causes us some concern because it eliminates a large pool of veterans from the preference. There are various reasons why the proposal to eliminate the eligibility to veterans who have left the military within the last 10 years could be problematic. For instance, what if they only had one job in that time and they're competing against somebody who's been working in state employment for years? Shouldn't they be able to use their veteran their military experience as applicable to the position also? We also have some concerns about veterans who have struggled with reentry. You could have a veteran who has had a really tough time for 11 years and is finally getting on their feet, and then suddenly they don't get to use their military experience to afford them an additional opportunity. Finally, in 2009, the legislature actually made the policy decision to take out a 15-year cap from the veterans preference and change it to a lifetime preference. We believe that that was the right policy, and we would encourage the legislature to continue with that sort of policy. This law is new. We understand that there are employers who are having a hard time, but we also know that there are employers who are using and applying the law and are not struggling. If we're going to make changes, I think that we need more work, more time to have greater discussion, and I encourage the committee to continue to have us discuss these issues going forward.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Paloma? Representative Parrish?
Thank you. Does this bill, in your opinion, as drafted, and tightened up language and, you know, made 10 years or whatever, does it still allow a right of action for a veteran if the veteran can show discrimination in the hiring practice?
Chair Lively, Representative Parrish, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Evans?
So does the language that should have been in the draft.
Okay.
Both were consistent on it.
Certainly, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. And this is for both Paloma and Mike. Both of you referred to opposition to Senate Bill 87, the underlying measure, and I don't want to make the assumption you oppose also the A version that came across one chamber at the time, the sort of the last version of the bill in 2015. You oppose that as well. It limited veterans in another way. Tried to limit.
Chair Lively, committee administrator.
Thank you.
Yes, we were, the Bureau was opposed to the A version.
Thanks. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm trying very, very hard to remember.
Yes.
I am fairly sure and certain that we registered opposition to the A and Girls version.
Thank you. Anything further for this group? Thank you both for being here. And now batting cleanup during a Department of Veterans is Director Smith. And Laurie, are you coming up too? Thank you both for being here. And we have more than Laurie with us today. I haven't seen her in a while.
Where's her dog?
Over here.
Right over here.
Mm-hmm.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Cameron Smith, the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and I want to start with a comment somewhat off of Representative Huffman's remarks. Veterans preference, we start this conversation from a place of strength. Back in World War II, someone asked General Marshall if we had a secret weapon at the time, and he said, yes, the best damn kids in the world. And that has been the case every generation since that greatest generation through Korea and Vietnam, the Gulf War, Iraq and Afghanistan. The strength of our military doesn't come from our tanks, our jets, our ships, but the men and women that raise their hand to serve us. And off of that strength, from their leadership, their initiative, their dedication, their commitment, their core values, veterans' preference comes from a place of strength, and that we want more veterans on our team as public employers, both across state agencies, the cities, and the counties. And veterans' preference also acknowledges at the same time not just their strengths, but the challenge of that transition out of the military. Now that less than 1% serve in uniform, having that disconnect and being able to translate your skills that are very real, both on that leadership side and very tangible skills, into civilian employment can be a challenge, and veterans preference helps navigate that transition. And our goal and our outcome has always been very clear, that we want more veterans on our team as public employers. But there have been challenges in that application of veterans preference, and also simply measuring the outcomes of how many veterans are employed across the state of Oregon. Only in about 2011 or 2012 did it finally get added back on to begin tracking veteran status as part of the HR system, at least for the state of Oregon. So not always even able to hold ourselves accountable to what has been somewhat a muddied statute with inconsistencies both across the statutes and rules over the years. And as we continue these conversations, we would highlight the challenges and the decision points across the policy area, very well highlighted in the Legislative Council memo of May of 2015, really digs into the different decision points that are before the legislature on this. So really, any solution that comes out for the legislature's consideration would have to begin to answer the questions raised in that memo of 2015 by Legislative Council, and would also agree with some of the other previous testimony that a lot of stakeholder work went into Senate Bill 87, and it gives a good framework for those decisions to begin to get a very real, meaningful preference. But that is one that is easily implemented and takes out discretion and is able to hold all of us accountable for the outcomes that the legislature desires. And I'm happy to answer any questions, or Lori can add as well. Go ahead, Lori.
Hi, Chair Lively, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Laurie Skillman. I'm a senior policy advisor for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And to reiterate a couple of things that Director Smith said, going forward, I would hope that the committee and the stakeholders would carefully consider a couple of things, and one was the Legislative Council memorandum that was drafted, specifically requested by this committee, to look at the existing statutes and rules and kind of determine what the issues were. What were the big problems? And I'm kind of the technical nerdy part of this team, and I think that Legislative Council came up with five critical elements to look at. The first one was that the existing BOLI rules, and those rules are the rules that the employers have to follow. It says, and I'm just taking this straight out of the memo, the existing BOLI rules that employers and veterans must comply with are inconsistent with the statutes. The second is the statutes are ambiguous and they lack defined terms, which make the interpretation and application of preference and the interview requirements difficult. The third is the inconsistent application of the law is a direct result of undefined and unclear terminology. Fourth, the statutory instructions for how employers should apply preference are incomplete. And fifth, the statutes and rules providing regarding mandatory hiring are in conflict with each other. So to any piece of legislation, I believe, should carefully look at what this memo suggests and what kinds of issues should be addressed in legislation moving forward, to really have a statute that is clear and unambiguous, that employers and veterans both can understand and that they can follow. And so the second piece of the puzzle then is Senate Bill 87, A engrossed. I went through that bill yet again. And looked at it, and as you know, that was 13 stakeholders came together and came to consensus on every word and comma in that particular bill. And every single aspect of Legislative Council's memo on the issues that needed to be addressed are addressed in that particular piece of legislation. I'm just going to highlight a couple. And probably one of the most important is in Section 1 of the bill, it states what the legislative intent is. And that's a real important piece to look at and to consider. And that kind of takes out all the ambiguity and lack of clarity if there is a pretty clear stated legislative intent. The second is that veterans' rights and benefits are clear and easy to understand. Probably most important for anyone is it really holds the employers accountable for how to apply preference because the instructions are clear. It provides a meaningful preference. Excuse me.
Lori, do you need water?
That would be so fabulous. One of the things it makes. I so appreciate a representative for giving water. Thank you. Now you're down. Thank you so much. One of the things. Yeah. Because the instructions for how to apply preference and when to apply it are so clear, it really holds employers accountable for following those things in statute. And it puts things in statute that are currently kind of exist in rule. So there's less discretion about that. One of the other things that makes it clear that an employer is required to give a veteran greater preference than a non-veteran and give a disabled veteran even greater preference during the final selection stage. There's nothing clear in statute about when you finally come down to the hiring stage. Sit. When you finally come down to the hiring stage, what preference do you give? What do you give the veterans preference at that final selection process or not? And in Senate Bill 87, that makes it abundantly clear. You must do that. So there were some, you know, everyone talked about some amendments at the end of session that this committee heard. Actually, the last ones were dash 6. And I think that everyone was on board with that. So perhaps if Legislative Council memo, Senate Bill 87, A engrossed, and the dash 6 amendments were carefully considered as a package, that would be a good foundation, a good starting place to move forward from. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Any questions? From Senator Parrish?
Thank you. So I want to think about Representative Evans, and he's not here to answer the question himself. The logic behind the 10-year mark. And when we passed this bill, the intent was all veterans, not do you reach a service member. And I get that there might, you know, be some goal to have some tightening of who is a veteran or not, but the last time I heard, and it's been a while since we've heard the number testimony, but the cohort that went to Iraq in 2009-10, that 20% of that unit was still long-term unemployed, and that's been 6 years now. So that could be for disability, could be for mental health issues, could be for any number of things. So there is always sort of a population that doesn't come back into the system the right way for whatever reason, who could hit that 10-year mark and still have maybe never been employed post, and, you know, and finally gets their post-deployment, and finally gets sort of their life together and moving in the right direction and the services and support they need. This would potentially exclude those folks in a few years when they hit that wall. So when I think about, you know, some of our older veterans who have struggled in their whole life off and on, it reminds me of being sort of like the argument we hear about mothers out of being displaced out of the workplace when you stop to have a child. Well, when you stop to have a deployment, I mean, there's no good time to be deployed, and sometimes it takes longer than others. I just want to get your sense of that 10-year mark, because my experience with veterans has been that sometimes people go in and out of long-term unemployment for, as it relates to their service. They might have had a job, got a little bit of experience, couldn't handle that job, cope with the job, and then come back sometimes, you know, a year or 2 years later and try to be hired again, but they could be under this version at the 10-year mark suddenly excluded. And I get that the, you know, GI Bill maybe has a limit, but now the post 9/11 GI Bill and passing it to my kids aren't limited at 10 years. So to use that, and we're still a ways from having kids in college, and Mark's, you know, earned that GI Bill 6 years ago, and I'm still at least 6 years from my last kid qualifying for it. So that 10-year thing, at least on the post 9/11 GI Bill, doesn't ring quite accurate to me, and I'd like you to speak to the 10-year issue in this bill, because I'm not loving that piece.
Chair Lively, members of the committee, Representative Parrish, and we'll share with committee staff to share with all of you some of the most recent unemployment numbers across both civilian side and the veteran side. I believe the most current numbers, veterans unemployment is below, the unemployment rate is below the civilian population rate. But you do see within the more specific breakdown of that veterans demographic, the spike in a higher unemployment rate is for those more recently returned veterans and transitioning veterans. But at the same time, no question that you cannot have challenges throughout that period across the generations. Regardless of that policy decision, there may be value in trying to re-emphasize and retarget that more recent transitioning generation of veterans. I think generally the veterans community, as Representative Huffman indicated with one of the veterans contacting him, would view this as a tightening, the 10-year limitation as a tightening up of eligibility. And generally we have been more expansive trying to increase that eligibility. And even some within our statutes, we define the definition of veteran, whether for our home loan program or whether for this veteran's preference. Right now, often many of currently serving Guard members don't qualify for this veteran's preference. So there may be other opportunities to look at a broadening of the definition while still meeting the intent of not making a burdensome application of veteran's preference for public employers.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Parrish, I don't remember who or exactly the circumstances, because there have been way too many conversations, and maybe Cheyenne can remember, but there was some pushback, and so I'm pretty sure Rep. Evans, if he were here, he would agree. We were just trying to find something to make people happy. It was just one of those bargaining things. I don't think anybody would fall on their sword for it or disagree with you on that being an arbitrary number. I do remember that Rep. Evans said, we're struggling with this, and he had remembered a GI connection there, and he thought of that, and that's kind of where that came from. So I don't think anybody is sold on that or willing to go to the cross for it.
Okay.
Okay. Any further questions? Thank you both. I appreciate Lori, the outline you did of the three key things, if we started from, might be helpful. Anybody else who wish to offer any testimony, please step to the microphone and give your name.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively, members of the committee. My name is Patty Jay. I've been before this committee at some point. I'm a program manager of Northwest Women Veterans Connection, but I'm speaking on my own behalf, and this will be very quickly. I served in the Oregon Air National Guard 1979 to 1986. It's a little emotional right now, but... Staff Sergeant, Aerospace Medical Technician. We made sure the pilots could fly and were healthy. This bill has been so many times when I feel like my service didn't matter. It doesn't count for really much of anything. I signed up. I tried to make my World War II dad, Marine, happy by signing up. By doing serving my country, but as a result, I don't have a box to check. There's no place except for one nonprofit, Central City Concern, where I was a veteran that mattered on my job application. So the definition of veteran to me needs to be everybody that signed up, showed up, wore the uniform, served their country. So please consider this very, very seriously, because in a state where there's no active duty base, there's a lot of us who fall into that group. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
I believe we have 330,000 veterans in the state of Oregon, so you've got a lot of company. I look at this, if we have a veteran and we have a non-veteran, has the same qualifications. The veteran has more of a background than the non-veteran, we should be gravitating toward that veteran, period. I mean, this isn't difficult, but it seems like we're making it difficult for some reason. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think we can go around and around what a veteran means, and we didn't see combat, and I understand that the level of commitment or sacrifice that was given for someone that did see combat, I'm not asking for the exact same preference, but to some level of acknowledgement and validation when it comes to the hiring process. You know, I don't even qualify for many benefits, so there is, I know it goes probably all the way up to the feds to really define veteran. But at least in this instance, those of us who have given our time and our service should have some kind of acknowledgement on the employer side. Thank you.
Follow up.
Yes, sir, please.
I thoroughly understand that. I also think that you need to get with the veterans and see if you have more benefits, because you'd be surprised some of the benefits that I was unaware of, that a lot of us are unaware of. And it's not because they're trying to withhold those benefits, but it's hard for them to reach 330,000 of us.
It is a constant, and I am always trying to meet with the VSOs and the different stakeholders in the community, the veteran community, to keep, you know, keep that updated to the information, so I can dispense that to my women veterans to know what we do qualify. And there's certainly room for improvement within women's health services, and I won't go down that road, but there's many more conversations to be had as far as the benefit side.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say I consider you a veteran. The fact that you,
thank you,
signed up and wore the uniform and did your work despite not seeing active duty on foreign soil. And I think that that's what we have done when we did our veteran is a veteran is a veteran legislation. And I hope that that's what we all intended to do, and that we can, you know, if we need to revisit some of that, and if you know, Patty, if you're not getting benefits that you deserve, that we can fix that.
Thank you, President Boone.
For you and other women vets and men vets and all vets.
Absolutely. Thank you.
A vet's a vet.
A vet's a vet. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think we would like to keep this simple. I think the reality is, and no offense to Paloma or anybody else in the room, but it does get complicated, because everybody has rights, and if somebody feels like their rights are stepped on, veteran or non-veteran, you know, whoever's across the fence can go to Boley and file a claim. They can hire an attorney, and we had one of them in the room testifying last year that takes these kinds of claims. So there are, that complicates it, and it keeps it from being as simple as we think it might, maybe should be, because we have to tighten the loopholes so that so that BOLI is covered, you know, and they're enforcing the right stuff, and the cities, you know the rules to follow so that they aren't discriminating, and so it really does start getting complicated, and that's why I think we're still sitting here talking about it.
I think that's right, unfortunately.
Okay.
Anything further?
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for stepping up. Anyone else?
Every time you get a lawyer involved, it's complicated.
Okay. I'm going to close the hearing on whatever it is we're having a hearing on. The bill was. I got so much stuff piled. 4096. Thank you very much. So for all of those who are here today, so my intent will be in May during legislative days to announce the next steps forward so that we can get the groups together. Everybody that's here before is going to be on that list, but we'll have outlined what our plan is and what the discussions will be so that hopefully then when we come back in the fall, we'll have reached whatever consensus we can reach and be ready to introduce it before the next session. So again, thank you all for participating.
I'm trying to say, John.
Anything?
I understood perfectly.
Thank you. Anything else for the committee?
No, sir.
Okay.
No, thank you.
Another thank you.
Perfect.
Urgers.
Well, I will get.
Urgers.
Well, I will get.